You're listening to a classic business podcast as heard on Classic 1027. 1027.
And we saw world stocks clawing their way back towards record highs today. Third day of gains in global markets as the dollar's dropped to a three-year low. Thank you, Mr. Powell, after we see not only the Fed but also the ECB attempting to talk down rising bond yields. There's a lot to keep tabs on, though, a renewed retail frenzy. We've seen GameStop on a tear again, bets on $70 oil. We've got near-decade-high copper prices. We've seen Charlie Munger on crypto. That won the day for me, though. Bitcoin, Munger said, reminded him of an old Oscar Wilde quote about fox hunting, the pursuit of the uneatable by the unspeakable. Anthea Gardner, MD of Cartesian Capital, with your market view. Anthea, run, baby, run.
Good evening, Michael. Yes, that's a funny one. But the market, unbelievable. Yeah, I mean, you know, there's no doubt that there was a lot of talk in the last couple of weeks about the reflation environment and how it's all going to work and how it's going to play out. What concerned me in the last 2 weeks, though, was that everyone was worrying that it would come to an end, you know, when we hadn't even seen the inflation part of the equation yet. But today we're all back on it and happy to be buying.
Happy to be buying. If you look at where we ended on the day, up at 1.94%, 67,483 points. The top 42.1%, and pretty much green across my screen wherever I look. Commodities, the standout though. Wow, platinum is at $1,253 an ounce, and oil is heading, as I said, inching its way closer to 70. In the top three movers on the day, Sibanye up 10.5%, Northam 7.5%, Anglo American 7.3%. So I think that's a good place to start in terms of the company news. Anglo, the big one for me, it declared a dividend of 72 cents. And amongst all of the global miners, and what I like about Anglo-American is that it is truly global now, and it doesn't have a lot of these local issues that will still, in the medium term, hurt South African-focused mining companies. I really like Anglo's. What did you think of these numbers? Strong free cash flow.
Oh, indeed. Absolutely. So, Michael, I think if you're holding mining companies at this stage, then it's dividends for you and you and you, and everybody gets one. But as far as Anglo American goes, the results were decent. They were okay. You know, the dividend represented a 40% payout ratio, it was in a 2.5% yield, so not as massive as the others. So if that's where what you're looking for, then probably not. But what was interesting is that the companies were saying that they're still targeting volume growth of 20 to 25% over the next 3 to 5 years. Net debt increased a bit, but that kind of, wasn't too concerning for the market.
What I like about this is your earlier point, that it sees some sustainability of these earnings and free cash flow numbers, which, let's face it, with cyclicals, they tend to fade off, and that run rate fades off fairly quickly. And it's not like the management teams are going out and doing huge deals on the back of these commodity prices. They're looking for growth by sweating existing mines and assets and resources. And I suppose for as long as that is the focus, we will see the supply-demand imbalance remain firmly in the favor of the underlying commodity baskets. Implats, though, did announce that it is going to be spending, I think, 10 billion rand here in South Africa and in Zimbabwe as well. Another of those companies just bulging with cash at the moment, 20 billion of net cash at the halfway mark. Any bets on whether or not it'll breach 50 at the full year?
Good question. Which way do we want to go on that? Should we say yes for now? I think your introduction to Implats was actually perfect. You know, it's always interesting to see what these commodity companies do when they're in this part of the cycle. And I was listening to an interview with Nico, the CEO, earlier on, and they've actually lowered their CapEx forecast a little bit, not much. But it's interesting to me because historically we know that in the good times, mining companies just cannot help themselves. It's as if they don't see the commodity boom ever coming to an end. And I kind of want to give Nico credit because he was saying that he thinks the deficit in the PGM is going to last for 5 to 8 years still, which is a long time, and therefore these commodity prices will hold. And it doesn't really make sense when you think about it, like kind of from where we've come to where we are now. But actually, I think it does take about 7 years for new projects to come online. So maybe he's right there. And then he added, he realizes that we're at the top end of the commodity price cycle, and so making acquisitions is expensive. So I guess that's why they lowered CapEx. But wow, I mean, an incredible dividend yield of 8.5% and net cash position of 18.6. This is after they paid their dividend of 3.1 billion rand.
That's just leftover cash. They're going to side pocket for now and just see what opportunities arise. And I mean, they did, you know, opportunities, and we've seen Sibanye go in this direction are plenty in the green mineral space at the moment. There's been a lot made about, particularly for the PGM miners, green hydrogen and the opportunity there, and all of the battery minerals that are going to be significant beneficiaries of this push into a new green infrastructure-led global growth post COVID-19.
Indeed, yeah. So that I haven't had a chance to look at Sibanye and why it's rallied like that. I think it was just on general kind of market talk. And there was a lot of talk from Nico and from Implats as well on Zimbabwe and kind of new markets and his confidence about where they're going. But I didn't really hear that much about the green market, as it is.
I think that on the Sibanye rally today, I'm not sure that it's rallying so much on the green story. I was just comparing what Implats has said it's doing with Sibanye. It seems to be where these miners are pivoting. There was a note out this morning, and I'm now scratching around in my memory banks because we've been so focused on the budget, but something about the MSCI review, and there might be a nice inflow into Sibanye on the back of this MSCI review. And we know index trackers do drive a lot of funds into these companies, but I'll have to go and have a look at that. On the losers side today, AB InBev down 3.5%, and we know alcohol companies have been hard hit by the lockdown, with restaurants closed and people not going out, and who knows when we'll go and have a proper party again anywhere, go to an event, a live concert. Gosh, how I miss that, Anthea, but it's coming through in AB InBev's results in the fourth quarter.
Sure. So alcohol distributors, retailers in South Africa, just absolutely nowhere yet. Market really didn't enjoy the AB InBev results. I understood that even though volumes were in line with forecasts, they did benefit from pricing mix in their global brands. You know, they're kind of better brands, if you like, Corona, Budweiser, and that sort of thing. So it performed better. But besides the 10% decline in revenue and 18% decline in EBITDA, I think the market is also putting quite a big weight on the negative drivers, such as the Q4 bad results in North America, the 53% decline in earnings per share, and that's if you strip out the one-time effect on top of that. So, and also, they were guiding for EBITDA margin pressure going forward. So just all in all, a terrible picture, really. And Gestalt also reported, and theirs was interesting because there was no doubt that they are seeing revenue growth and earnings per share growth, but from Africa and international business. So Gestalt suddenly is no longer a South African business either, although they're definitely not paying a dividend for you.
Well, that, and I found that surprising, considering that we saw better than expected numbers from Gestalt to withhold the dividend. I guess that is in the face of a government that potentially could lock down the alcohol industry again as we head into Easter and winter. And if you look at Discovery's results out today, they laid out quite clearly the risk and the threat of a third wave being multiplied by a super spreader event during the Easter holiday. It's very similar to what we saw play out over December. And in that environment, it would be hard to see government not reverting to its default of locking down and beating the alcohol industry. Woolies came out, too, with its results for the halfway mark. And the market liked these, up 0.7% on a day where the market was up 0.2%. I don't know how much you can read into the price movement on it. And there's a lot to keep tabs on here. What did you make of the Woolies results?
So So nice to see a positive trading update from Woolworths for a change, even though it is pretty much in line with expectations. But it really is a company that's made up of two parts, right? So they had turnover growth of 5.8%, but their gross profit margin was down 190 basis points. And it seems to be for exactly the same reasons that all the other clothing retailers have had margin compression. They've been forced into offering massive sales. Woolworths' fruit sales margin were actually up 12 basis points. But then I think in the clothing, I mean, how many pairs of tracksuit pants does one person working from home actually need? And I think that's what's playing out in Woolworths at the moment. I think it's too early to give management or new management credit for anything. The fact that the share was actually up today, maybe just, you know, the market was up. So
when are they just going to strip out that food business and list that separately so we can just have access to that? Because once again, if you look at food, excellent. Operating margin, 8.2%, well ahead of its peers in the space. And it does appeal to a certain demographic. If you're fortunate to be able to go and shop at Woolies, you're probably amongst the top, I don't know, 3 or 4% of taxpayers, if you look at the tax tables from yesterday's budget. But it appeals to that market. It's convenient, and they're doing well in an environment where people are not going to restaurants. They're going to Woolies and buying those pre-cooked meals or splashing out on the other excellent offerings that Woolies Food offers.
Sure, and I'm not sure that when lockdown ends that the clothing business is going to be able to make up the losses that it has had to go through in lockdown. I think firstly they've got so much competition locally and they've just got it wrong a couple of times too many, but who knows.
And then Grindrod is another interesting one coming out with its results next week, I think, and with the trading statement up today. A lot of it's backward-looking, and you've almost got to ignore that if you look at Grindrod as an investment opportunity, because what we're seeing in the shipping market at the moment is prices literally going through the roof. We're seeing shipping rates have doubled during the first quarter, and that's traditionally a weak period for shipping due to things like the Chinese Lunar New Year holiday and the like. And if you look at where depressed shipping rates have been, it's coming off a low base. But it looks like as the global economy starts to open up, Grindrod is really potentially a very big beneficiary of increased global trade.
Absolutely, yeah. So the share was positive today, but it has been down, 14% in the last week. And that's kind of despite these business updates and the show that the ports and terminals and logistics businesses were doing so well. In fact, I think they called it robust. And I think locally, the exporting of commodities has certainly helped in this sector. So they definitely are going to be a beneficiary of that. And maybe this is, being as the share has come down, has come off so much in the last week, an opportunity to be buying some.
Absolutely, buy the dip. And then lastly, Anthea, your thoughts, a penny for your thoughts on the budget. A difficult one in the circumstances for the finance minister. There's been a lot of critique around cutting things like healthcare and education, healthcare in particular, in the middle of a pandemic. And then others saying, well, what do you do when debt is heading towards 100% of GDP and your economy is not growing and you've been giving civil servants inflation plus increases for the last decade? You have to draw a line in the sand somewhere. What are your thoughts on the budget?
So, Peter, who? I think Edward Teasbetter was the hero of the day yesterday, no doubt about that. And the Minister of Finance said all the right things. You know, he's talking about fundamentally altering the structure of the economy, lowering barriers to entry, raising productivity. He mentioned the zero-based budgeting. So many things he kind of avoided, talk of the SOEs. And I do get the sense that government are wanting to or are trying their best to hold this line on expenditure or containment of expenditure. But that, I think, is a wait-and-see game. My actual take on the numbers is that I feel like this is a story of mathematics, I'm calling it, because the assumptions are interesting. So we know that we had a nice windfall of tax at the end of last year, which is a bit of a relief or unexpected compared to, you know, what it should be, nothing. But and then the talk of stabilizing our debt, but the governor seems to, sorry, the minister seems to understand that is just a trajectory that is out of hand and that he wants to stabilize at 88.9 in 25, 26, which is a couple of years down the line. But I think the point he's missing is that he's made tax revenue from mining companies, and the commodity prices have held this year. So we've done better than expected, but that's not going to last for the next 5 years. So how does he project forward where he's going? I don't see that. I see that as the flaw. I mean, I really like this focus again on infrastructure investment, because they have to, I feel like government has understood that to grow, that they need to grow the economy, and that they have to start building confidence again and investing in infrastructure, and that they've got to get the private sector to start investing. You know, so there's all that nice talk of Operation Vulindlela. So all good, but is it a real thing, or is it just mathematics?
And I worry about those GDP forecasts, 3.3% this year, but averaged out to 1.6% over the medium-term expenditure framework period. And that tells me that Treasury is not very confident that these so-called growth-enhancing reforms that we're working on are going to deliver very much growth at all. Anthea Gardner, MD of Cartesian Capital, with your view from the market.